Hello, everyone, and welcome to tonight's LSE Ideas event on the EU and the Romani people. As I'm sure you are aware, COVID-19 and the response to the killing of George Floyd has exposed long-standing racism and racial inequality, and of course, in so doing, has powerfully reminded us that these are as deeply rooted problems as ever. The LSE and its institutions are taking a lead in addressing the challenge, and today's discussion on the EU and the Romani people is the first in the LSE Ideas, Racism and International Politics series, which will be taking place over this academic year. The Roma, or the Romani people, are Europe's largest ethnic minority, with an estimated population of between 10 and 12 million, of whom approximately 6 million are citizens or residents of the EU. Many EU Roma or Romani people are still victims of prejudice and social exclusion, despite the discrimination ban across EU member states. The umbrella term Roma or Romani people encompasses diverse groups, including the Roma and the Sinti, among others, and EU policy documents and discussions commonly employ this terminology. My name is Jennifer Jackson-Preece. I'm Associate Professor of Nationalism with a joint appointment in both the European Institute and the Department of International Relations. I'm very pleased to be sharing this important discussion today and delighted to welcome our panel. We are joined today by Romeo Franz, who is a member of the European Parliament as of 2018, re-elected again in 2019, and he is the first Sinto from Germany to be elected to the European Parliament. Since 2014, Mr. Franz has been managing director of the Hildegard Le Grand Foundation, and he has been involved in civil rights work on the topic of people with Romani background for more than 20 years. We are also joined by Angela Coetzee, who is an assistant professor and chair of Romani studies and academic director of the Roma Graduate Preparation Program at the Central European University in Budapest. For those of you who are Twitter users in the audience, we do have a hashtag for the event, so you are encouraged to tweet with hashtag LSE Romani. As usual, there will be a chance for the audience to engage directly with the panel. To submit your questions, please use the Q&A feature at the bottom of your screen. Questions will be submitted to myself and I will pose as many as I can to the speakers. Please also, when you are posting your question, do let us know your name and your affiliation. At this point, I am delighted to turn over to Romeo Franz so we can begin our conversation. Mr. Franz.
Thank you very much. Dear ladies and gentlemen, many thanks for the opportunity to speak today about a topic that is very close to my heart. The Romani people are Europe's largest ethnic minority. Out of an estimated 10 to 12 million in total in Europe, some 6.5 million live in the EU, and most of them hold the citizenship of an EU country. A significant part of the Romani people in Europe lives under marginal conditions in both rural and urban areas, as well as in very poor socioeconomic conditions. The discrimination, social exclusion, and segregation that Romani people face are mutually reinforcing. They are confronted with limited access to quality education, difficulties in integration into the labor market. Romani people face greater exposure to unemployment and employment precariousness, decreasing the opportunities for poverty reduction and social inclusion through the labor market. This corresponding to low income levels and limited access to quality healthcare and poor health and living conditions. These circumstances in turn result in higher mortality rates and lower life expectancy, as well as greater risks of premature deaths caused by chronic and non-communicable diseases, including cancer, compared with non-Romani. According to the second European Union Minority Survey published by the EU Fundamental Rights Agency in 2016, some 80% of Romani people in 9 EU member states with the largest Romani populations live below their country's poverty threshold. Every third Romani lives in housing without running water. Every third Romani child lives in a household where someone went to bed hungry at least once in the previous months. And 50% of Romani people between the age of 6 and 24 was not in education. This trend is confirmed in the EU Fundamental Rights Agency Roma and Traveler Survey 2019, which shows dramatic high rates of persons and children going to bed hungry at least once in the last month, and notes that almost half of Roma and travelers, 45%, in the 6 EU member states felt discriminated against in at least one area of life covered in the survey in the past 12 months. Against this background, one can only conclude the Romani people face discrimination and unequal access to public services. In 2011, the European Commission called for national Roma integration strategies in order to ensure that effective policies are in place in the member states. The Commission proposed that national Roma integration strategies were designed, or where they already existed, were adapted to meet EU Romani integration goals with targeted actions and sufficient funding, national, EU, and other, to deliver them. It proposed solutions to address the existing barriers to a more effective use of EU funds and laid the foundations of a monitoring mechanism. The EU framework encouraged member states and enlargement countries to adopt a comprehensive approach to Romani integration, to mainstream Romani inclusion using policy, legal and funding instruments, to adopt national Romani integration strategies, and to set up coordination, consultation, and monitoring mechanism. In 2013, the EU Roma framework was strengthened by a Council recommendation on effective Romani integration measures. With this recommendation came a stronger focus on two horizontal areas, namely anti-discrimination and poverty reduction. It also introduced, as of 2016, an annual reporting obligation for member states, contributing to the development of a European system of monitoring. The December 2016 Council conclusions on accelerating the process of Romani integration confirmed the member states' commitment. The EU framework for national Romani integration strategies up to 2020 was a framework in evolution. The fact that it was established is considered as an achievement by itself and represented a turning point for Romani communities in Europe. It puts the social integration of people with a Romani background high on the European policy agenda and put pressure on member states to develop national strategies. However, as a soft policy tool, it provided a skeleton for policy coordination, consultation and monitoring, and targeted policy recommendations for national Romani integration strategies. It was at the discretion of national regional and local governments if and how they translate the recommendation into administrative capacities and concrete policy actions. As a consequence, in the Commission report on the evaluation of the EU Romani framework for national Romani integration strategies up to 2020, it is shown that effectiveness in progress towards Romani integration goals is assessed as overall limited with significant differences across areas and countries. Education is found as the area with most progress. Improvements in early school living, early childhood education, and compulsory schooling, but deterioration in segregation. The self-perceived health status of Romani has improved, but medical coverage continues to be limited. No improvement has been observed in access to employment and the share of young Romani not in employment. Education or training has been increased. The housing situation remains difficult. Some progress has been observed in respect to the general objective of fighting poverty. Anti-Gypsyism and hate crime continue to be a matter of high concern. Despite evidence of some reduction in discrimination experiences of Romani when accessing services in some areas. The number of Romani pupils who left education between 2011 and 2016 at the level of secondary school on average decreased from 87% in 2011 to 68% in 2016. The proportion of Romani early school leavers compared to early school leavers in the general population across all countries surveyed remains very high. In 2019, there were still 68% of Romani who leave education early. In addition, only 18% of Romani children transit to higher levels of education, and the absenteeism and early school leaving rates of Romani are significantly higher than for other categories of pupils. With respect to employment, the gap between Romani and non-Romani is significant. Including the gap in youth who are not in employment, education or training, the employment rates of Romani are about 40% in most member states, while Romani on average increased from 56% to 63% between 2011 and 2016. The housing disparities continue to be significant, with about 30% of Romani still living without water within their dwellings, 36% without toilet, shower, or bathroom. There was little progress in the share number of Romani covered by health insurance between 2011 and 2016. The share of Romani covered by national health insurance is 76%, which is significantly lower than under non-Romani. The share of Romani assessing their health status is good or very good, is 68%. More than a quarter of Romani feel they are limited in their activities due to their health, and 22% have long-standing illness or health problems. The framework for NREIS mentions that the life expectancy at birth in the EU is 76 for men and 82 for women. For Romani, it is estimated to be 10 years less. In addition, while the infant mortality rate in the EU is 4.3 per 1,000 live births, there is evidence that the rate is much higher among Romani communities. Therefore, it is considered that we that the main weakness of the framework up to 2020 is its non-binding character. It was a soft policy, which relies mainly on the political will of all levels of government in member states for putting national strategies into effect, including the administrative capacity and budgets. Unfortunately, most of the member states developed national strategies without allocating adequate budgets for the implementation. To correct this, the European Parliament called for the first time in the historical resolution adopted in September 17, with 545 for a post-2020 EU directive for the equality and inclusion and combating anti-Gypsyism for Romani people, a legislative act with a binding character for the member states in terms of Romani inclusion goals to be reached. Political support when racism against different minority groups is rising sharply is a key point for the inclusion of Romani people. Major mobilization of key stakeholders exploring the opportunities around the upcoming EU presidencies is needed to ensure political commitment for a post-2020 potential directive. Following this approach, adequate funding will be allocated and it could lead to a more successful implementation of the national strategies or action plans, especially at regional and local level. The EU must link its political and financial priorities to the directive. When local and national budgets are developed, the inclusion of Romani people will be among the priorities. More efficient and strengthened monitoring and oversight mechanisms must be developed, and EU Commission and Member States will ensure that the funds allocated are properly spent and not misused if a directive will be delivered. Another point of criticism is the use of the common denominator Roma, while the framework highlighted diversity under the broad umbrella term of Roma. It failed to recognize the diversity within the Romani population. The term Roma, or the double term Sinti and Roma, which is used in EU policies and discussions, does not reflect the heterogeneity of the minority. So Romani people, such as the Calais, the Manouche, the Lovara, Risende, Boyash, Domari, Calderash, Romani Child, and Sinti feel excluded or not addressed. Roma is one of the groups of Romani people in Europe. The denomination of one group used to describe the other groups in EU policies and discussions is often criticized among communities members. Based on this ground, the post-2020 policy for the equality and inclusion of Romani people should take into account the internal heterogeneity of the community in the priority domains, ensuring that nobody is left behind, including those without an ethnical background such as Ashkali, Egyptians or travelers, but stigmatized as gypsies. Moreover, the denomination referring to all the groups should be Romani people. The framework up to 2020 lacked coherence among priorities. Thematic areas of activity such as political participation, Romani arts and culture, Romani language and history should be explicitly mentioned in the post-2020 policy as additional measures to the four main priority areas of education, employment, housing, and healthcare. To achieve this in an effective way, the European Commission and the Member States must move from the paternalistic top-to-bottom approach, mainly used for the development of the current framework to the non-paternalistic one, a bottom-up approach, would allow Romani people to participate more effectively in policymaking at all levels, local and regional, stakeholders, NGOs, activists, experts, community members, etc., must be involved too in the development, implementation, and monitoring of the public policies towards Romani people post-2020. Considering the non-paternalistic approach a potential post-2020 EU directive for the equality and inclusion of Romani people must be developed based on more reliable quantitative and qualitative data. The future strategies must be based on the latest available information, since the access to a larger number of communities and considerable sources of solutions for the improvement of Romani situation will be broader than in 2011. These data must be the basis of detailed and realistic action plans with a realistic and adequate predefined budget included into the national, regional, and local budgets according to the magnitude of the social inclusion needs of Romani people. A good practice in this context is the state treaty signed by the land of Baden-Württemberg with the German Regional Association of Sinti and Romani. A joint council was established in 2014. The members of the council are the representatives of the German Sinti and Roma in Baden-Württemberg, but also representatives of the state government, the state parliament, and the municipal state associations. The focus of their work will be primarily on promoting education and culture of Sinti and Roma. As regards the targeting of a post-2020 EU directive, the focus should not be mainly on marginalized Romani people. Instead, it is recommended to increase investment in and empowerment of Romani youth, women, and children, especially those in primary school who face difficulties in going to school because of their families' financial and social precarious situation, and paying more attention to the intra-EU mobility of Romani people. The initial absence of a response to anti-Gypsyism in the framework up to 2020 resulted in a reluctance to include explicit measures targeting anti-discrimination and specifically anti-Gypsyism in national strategies. In its 2019 Roma and Travelers survey, the Fundamental Rights Agency found that almost half of Roma and Travelers respondents, 44%, experienced had hate-motivated harassments in the 12 months preceding in the survey. As examples, the Leipzig University research team conclude that the massive anti-Gypsyism often gets out of sight. 60% of Germans agree with the statement that Sinti and Roma tend to crime, and 49.2% want to ban them from the inner cities. Even more, in times of coronavirus, Romani people were made the scapegoat for the spread of the virus. Unfortunately, this happened in Eastern European countries. Therefore, combating anti-Gypsyism, the specific form of racism towards Romani people, must be tackled across the key areas of the next post-2020 EU policy. Preventive and reactive measures should be developed and included in the post-2020 Romani policies. Member states must officially recognize anti-Gypsyism as a specific form of racism against Romani people, and they must implement specific measures against it at any level where it takes place. On 6th October, the Commission released the post-2020 EU Strategic Framework for Roma Equality, Inclusion and Participation. Let me please share my opinion on its effectiveness. Why the new EU Roma Framework Strategy marks a turning point and still remains a toothless tiger. The post-2020 EU Roma Strategic Framework marks a turning point in achieving equality and justice for Romani people. I welcome the commitment of the European Commission for a stronger, more clear and demanding strategic document to ensure that more than 6 million of Romani people in the EU and those in Western Balkans will stop to suffer from discrimination and be able to access their rights as equal citizens. Building on the evaluation and lessons learned from the 2011 to 2020 EU Roma framework, which led only to limited progress, the Commission understood and managed to put together a strengthened post-2020 policy. In addition to achieving equality between Romani people and the general population in the main four strategic pillars of the framework, education, health, housing, and employment, the Commission makes a fight against anti-Gypsyism, the specific form of racism against Romani people, a new priority. It is a major step forward in the political debate to shift from so-called Roma issues to a perspective that acknowledged the racist stereotypes against Romani people in the majority society as a main reason for their social exclusion and their precarious living situation. Another important novelty in comparison to the last EU framework strategy on Roma inclusion marks the specific set of indicators that provides the basis to monitor future progress by member states in the inclusion of Romani people by 2030. This is important because the last strategic document was very general in its objectives and did not allow a clear monitoring of progress and regresses. This time, the context is provided for a more differentiated picture of the member states' actions in progress. Furthermore, the new strategy promotes the equal participation of self-organizations of the Romani communities at all stages of the policy process and a better reflection of the heterogeneity of the Romani communities across Europe. These new elements reflect largely the claims made in the resolution on and adopted on 7th September 2020 by the Parliament, for which I had the privilege to be the rapporteur. Why is it still a toothless tiger? While the post-2020 framework is a strengthened strategic document and paves the road to achieving inclusion for our people, it is still a soft policy. Even if a council recommendation accompanies it, this will not pose any obligation on the member states to actually implement effective national Romani inclusion strategies with adequate funding from national budgets, progress and success indicators, and a robust monitoring mechanism. It misses the binding character of a legislative act. It is an inconvenient truth. Without an equality law for people of Romani descent and without a rule of law mechanism, the framework strategy remains a toothless tiger. How do we actually want to improve the precarious situation of millions of people with Romani background in Europe when political leaders in the countries with some of the highest Romani populations openly nourish anti-Gypsyist stereotypes like it was the case in the Hungary? How are EU funding instruments supposed to achieve their objectives when financing is directed by national authorities to activists, cementing the stigmatization of Romani communities instead of contributing to inclusion and the fight against racism, like it is currently the case in Bulgaria? How can we achieve the inclusion of Romani communities when several countries showed several human rights breaches against Romani people in the context of COVID-19 measures without allowing them access to justice? We have to be honest with ourselves. Without a greater commitment by the EU governments, little will change for our people on site. I'm very glad that we currently have a large majority in the European Parliament that is in favor of a European equality law for Romani people and a rule of law mechanism that ensures respect for fundamental rights as a precondition for the member states to gain access to EU funding. Only with legislative action will we enable Romani people to exercise their rights as equal citizens and ensure that our financial support gate gets to where it is urgently needed. In addition, I sustain that Romani terminology is better representing the heterogeneity of our people instead of Roma, which refers to only one of our groups, while we are many other such as Sinti, Kale, Lovara, Manush, Resende, etc. Therefore, I strongly believe that the Commission must present to the European Parliament and the Council in 2021 a legislative proposal to ensure equality, inclusion, and participation. On what legal basis? It is time for Article 19 of the Treaty of the Functioning of the European Union that allows us to take appropriate action to combat discrimination based on the racial or ethnic origin. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. France. That was a very thorough overview and also an important evaluation of EU strategy, and I think as well particularly helpful in explaining the importance of the terms that we use and how that is a part of our efforts to recognize and empower the Romani people. At this point, I would like to bring Angela Coetzee into the conversation. Angela, over to you.
Yeah, thank you so much. First of all, I'm really happy and very grateful for this discussion, and thanks for the organizer to creating this opportunity to talk about Romani issues and Romani people and the European Union. So before I'm going to start, actually, I mean, I'm in a kind of interesting situation because I have to reflect on what Romeo France was presented, which was a really, really comprehensive and thorough report and included a lot of statistics, as well as he referred to many initiatives, legislations, frameworks, strategies, programs, which has been initiated by the European Union, European Commission, as well as by the European Union member states. And I think I don't have to repeat again, but one thing is very clear, based on his report, that there is a huge gap. There's a huge, I would call it as a racial gap between Roma and non-Roma in Europe. I think it's quite clear. I just would like to refer back to one statistics, which is very important. It's coming from 2016 and produced by the European Fundamental Rights Agency, which says that some 80% of Romani people in 9 EU member states with the largest Romani population live below their country's poverty threshold, the poverty line. Can you believe that, you know, to have a population which more than two-thirds of the Romani population are living under the poverty threshold, right? And meanwhile, we are claiming human rights, we're claiming that the bottom-up approach, the people has to be participate, they have to be involved, and how is gonna be? And I would like to highlight one issue, but I think it's very important to think further, the issue of under-theorized structural racism and structural oppression. And why I'm saying that, because if we think about the statistics, which was mentioned by Romeo France as well, it's you know, we always think about it, oh, this is a characteristics of Roma, right? But why is that? And there is an assertion of Roma as an instrumental in creating their own poverty, and those being dependent on welfare system is endemic. And I think it's a kind of narratives which coming up again, and we are reciting and repeating the statistics, but we are not going beyond the numbers that how this kind of disadvantages has been accumulated through histories, and even if we just think about the last 30 years when we think about, you know, even in the early late 90s when the European Union started to negotiate with the European member states, and remember that there was a very famous Copenhagen criteria, right, that member states has to basically ensure the human rights of Roma, and they become a focus of accession negotiation with structural funds made available to combat poverty and social exclusion. And it started in the 90s, late 90s, and now we are in 2020. And I think it's quite clear from the Fundamental Rights Agency report, as well as from the Roma Civil Monitor report, but I think it's quite important. And there is a Roma Civil Monitoring Project, which is led by the Central European University and by some of my colleagues who are working at the Center for Policy Studies. And they are talking about, actually, there is a sizable discrepancies, not just between Roma and non-Roma in the European Union in terms of statistics, what we heard already, but also between the EU member states' declared policies and the implementation. So how these policies have been implemented in a practice, it's quite problematic. And not just policies, but also legislations. I'm really grateful actually for Romeo France, who was a rapporteur of the report on the implementation of national Roma strategies and combating negative attitudes toward people with Romani background in Europe. And they are enlisting all kinds of legislation, all kinds of tools, which already we have available and we could use it. But the problem is that these legislations are not really implemented and enforced and not implemented in practice. Right. And as the Roma Civil Monitoring Program suggests as well, that EU need to robustly investigate the abuse of EU funding, how this money was spent on Roma, and ensure the proper implementation of existing EU law, including the anti-discrimination and anti-racism legal frameworks at the national and local level. So basically, we have already some really important legislation which are still not used. And one of my questions would be that how this new EU legislative proposal Bill Berg, what do you expect from that? How is it going to be different from the previous legislation? And why I start to talk about, you know, the structural racism, why is it important to talk about it? Because I believe that we are really at the turning point. I really believe in that. And just think about the increasing racist incidents against Roma, even in this COVID time as well. And they are blamed Roma communities for spreading the virus. And we can hear all kinds of stories when Roma are singled out as a scapegoat. And I'm inspired by a poignant article of civil rights lawyer and legal scholar Michelle Alexander, who wrote an article in 2020 during the summer, I think, and which is called "America, This Is Your Chance." This is your chance. And I think it's really interesting to talk about in the midst of the US election, right? After the brutal murder of George Floyd forced the US to embark upon a national reckoning, and we too exhort Europe to seize the day and face courageously its racial history and racial present. And I think European public intellectuals and European policymakers and politicians cannot continue to deny or underplay the depth of anti-Romani racism embedded within their societies. And I'm talking about embedded within their societies because usually we are always talking about the visible violence, you know, and we can theorize like anti-Gypsyism or racism as something which is at and as an attitude toward a very specific group, who is in this case Roma, right? But we are talking about not just attitude and belief and stereotype, but we are talking about the structure which reproducing this kind of extreme inequality. And I would say that there is a radical inequality in Europe. And we have to rethink and change the logic of redistribution, and it's an imperative. And I would like to revoke Samuel Moyn, legal scholars who wrote about that, you know, even perfectly realized human rights are compatible with radical inequality. So my point is that it's very important to have all kinds of legislation and rule of law, which has to be implemented. But also we have to think about the structural embedded inequality, which has been accumulated and reproduced through over centuries. And if we think about the dominant model of poverty reduction in Europe is to generate economic growth, you know, that we're going to bail out the banks, we're going to help for multinational companies, and it will be very helpful for the poor people as well, for Roma. And we thought that this kind of trickle-down, you know, theory will work. But unfortunately, after 30 years, after the changes, after 1989 or early 90s, so after 30 years, it does not work to alleviate poverty at all. So if we're going to go back again to the statistic, which shows that access to public services, it's very limited. Access to quality public services, very limited for Roma, in the shrinking welfare system. And we have in some of the places, as the Roma Civil Monitor report refers as well, there are some kind of separate services for Roma. What we know that separates is really unequals, and in fact, this kind of, you know, notion has been challenged 60 years ago in the US by the Supreme Court, right, that declared the separate schools are unconstitutional and the separates are unequal. So my point is that how can we go further What can we do in this really troubled time? And I would like to evoke a feminist legal scholar, Kimberla Crenshaw, insights, who told that we must center our intersectional politics of envisioning on those who are in the most disadvantaged situation. The reason is that if we start to develop a language, politics that resonate with the situation of the lived experience of the most disadvantaged among us, then this will provide a critical basis for solidarity and collective actions across European society. As Crenshaw explained, the goal is to facilitate the inclusion of the most marginalized groups, for whom it can be said, when they enter, we all enter. So I really believe that in the current political landscape in Europe is replete with political minefields and traps offering rather illusionary notions of inclusions and very ambiguous answers to overcome the social exclusion of Roma. So Europe, in this very troubled moment and troubled time, so we have to think about and change the logic. So instead of, you know, helping the most wealthy, we should go back and help for those who are the most disadvantaged, because we are so much interconnected and we are so much interdependent, and we experience this actually during the COVID time, right? So we are very much depend on the essential workers, the cleaners, and, you know, those people who are really on the front line. So we have to change the logic of redistribution, and we have to think about those who are most marginalized, because when they enter, we all enter. So I would like to envision, you know, a new social Europe from this perspective. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we will shortly move to bring our audience in. But first, I would like to invite Mr. France to reply. I'm going to be a bit cheeky. I'm actually going to sneak in a comment of my own, chair's privilege. But as I was listening to you, Mr. France, I was really struck by how measured you were in thinking about where we are now. And to be very honest, in my own mind, I feel rather less measured, because surely the COVID-19 pandemic is a terrible indictment of Europe's current record in dealing with the structural inequality of the Romani people. And I can't remember how many years we have been acknowledging that this is the most marginalized community in Europe. Pandemic, we see vividly the extent to which the Romani people are disproportionately affected, both by the disease itself, but also by the wider economic and social consequences of the disease. Obviously, lockdowns may be applied, you know, generally, legally speaking, but the effects they have are disproportionate. And we've seen that in the way that lockdown has played out. We've seen that in efforts to try and compensate for the economic effects. Clearly, if you're in an informal economic sector, you don't have the necessary documentation. Obviously, children, if schools are online, again, that's really reinforcing the structural inequality rather than addressing it. And so I would particularly welcome, and I'm sure many members of the audience would as well, to hear a bit more from you on how you see these issues fitting in also to Europe's response to the pandemic itself.
Yeah. You know, we speak about human beings here, my people, just my blood. And for us, is that not a new situation? And we must know and recognize that anti-Gypsyism is the strongest form of racism in Europe since more than 600 or 700 years. That what we hear what we hear now see in the times of COVID-19 is a traditional kind of racism, a traditional kind of discrimination. Let us take a look in the past. Look at the time of the National Socialism. I lost 6 members of my family in the Holocaust because there was the Romani people. That was the reason. And what we see now in the COVID-19 times now in Bulgaria and Slovakia, they are guilty because they are born as Romani people. Not more, not less. And all the studies what we have shows that between 50 and 80, 90% of the majority hates us, hates Romani people. And they don't speak about Romani people, they speak about gypsies, Cigane, Cigoina. That shows they have a picture from us, that's a stigmata, that's a full, the people are full of cliches and stereotypes. And this since 600 years. And now I will, let me make an example with Germany. Look, Germany, in the time of the National Socialism, 500,000 of my people was murdered from the Nazis. After this time, the German government, the Bundesrepublik Deutschland, don't recognize this Holocaust against my people. First 1980, then they recognized this Holocaust. So that shows that the majority don't think about these things about anti-Gypsyism and the Holocaust and the and this and this Holocaust against my people. It was in the Bundesrepublik Deutschland, the Kurds used terms from the Nazis in the time of 1980 and 1992. And that shows in Germany. Then you look in other countries like Bulgaria or Romania or France or Italy. That's the point. They don't reflect themselves with anti-Gypsyism. That's very, it's very difficult for the majority to reflect themselves with anti-Gypsyism. And the governments and the education in the schools, they don't mention this. Look, when I was in school in this time, in the historical hour, I don't learn something about the Holocaust against my people. And my children too. Why? This part of the history, it's not a part in the curricula. So, and that's a big, very big problem, because these prejudices are very old, and the parents give these prejudices to their kids again, and they give to their kids again. And that's the biggest problem what we have. And look, now I will tell you, we have seen, and I have mentioned it very loud in the EU Parliament, the situation of my people in COVID-19 times in Bulgaria and in Romania and in other countries. I mentioned very loud. And what's happened? Nothing. Nothing what's happened. So, not. That's, they are not. You know, when you see the Commission and we speak about the EU framework, the new one, and I tell them, look, people, you have now time 10 years. Look at this 10 years. We have an evaluation. It was not working. I tell you why. We have not a binding character. It's everything voluntary for the national states. And the national states, when it's voluntary, they don't do it. They want the money, but they don't do it for our people. We was not an equal partner. The Romani people was not an equal partner. So we was victims. And then when I come to the Europarlament, when they speak about the topic, they speak, we have a Roma problem. We have a Roma problem. I was standing up and I said, we have not a Roma problem. We have a racism problem that you must recognize. We must work in the majority against racism. And that's the point that we have, why we have this situation in COVID-19 too. This is a clear racism, anti-Gypsyism that kills our people. And that's a very big problem. And when the majority and the governments and the EU is not willing to recognize that we can only change this situation when they really want to reflect themselves with racism and anti-Gypsyism, and we have the binding character and a law for equality for our people, when they don't recognize us, we cannot change really the situation. That is my opinion.
Thank you. And following on from that, and obviously this is true in general when we're thinking about ways in which to try and empower minority communities, but I think COVID magnifies it. Really, fundamentally, the response has to be at the local level, is what I would say. We need to engage much more closely with local actors, move away from the center, be more directly involved with the communities themselves. Would there be any best practice examples that you would point to? I mean, obviously, we are very aware of, you know, the less best practice, but is there anything in this that you would point to and say that really is what we need to be doing more of?
We have really, Jennifer, we have a best practice example. Baden-Württemberg is a state in Germany. And this state has the courage to make a contract, a treaty, with the Sinti and Roma who are living in Baden-Württemberg. They make a contract, and one day after they signed this treaty became a law. One day later in the parliament, in the country parliament, became this treaty a law. At this moment, and we have seen this this treaty, now he is 6 years old. The situation in Baden-Württemberg with the Roma people changed very quick, very fast, very, very fast. Because in this moment, the government says, we are now equal partner. You are not a victim and not, you are an equal partner of us. So, and at this point, they give them the financial possibility with 750,000 euros to work every year. And they can make the culture work and everything and so. So, and now the situation changes because this, every problem what is in Baden-Württemberg becomes with Sinti and Roma. That's a second instrument. After this treaty, it was a part in this treaty to build a council with six Romani people and six members of the parliament. They make a council, and this council is a part directly as a state's ministry. And in this council comes every question who is involved with Romani people, comes in this council. And these 12 people are speaking about these things, and they must do something. And now really the Romani people in Baden-Württemberg have very much more self-confidence and they feel equal. And now the problems are really going very much down. And then was the next question was how we can change the situation because the people in the curricula we have not this topic. And then the council says, okay, now the Ministry for Education will be in 6 months give us a draft how we can bring this topic of the Romani people in Baden-Württemberg that we can do it in a curricula. And they do it. And that's all the question. And that was something that shows, or that is something that can work in whole Europe for every minority, not only for us as Romani people, for every minority. And this point, when we have a law and we are an equal partner of the government and we have equal rights, not more, not less, we can change really the situation and we can take Baden-Württemberg really as an example, what we can visit and we can show it, how this kind of treaty works. And that's really an example that can, I must repeat it again, that we can really use in whole Europe when the government is willing to do it. And that was in Baden-Württemberg, this government says, we must do it, we want to do it, and let us do it this way. And it was very, very successful.
Thank you. I've got some questions that I want to put to you from our audience. We have one from Carolina Plua, who wants to know a bit more about the issue of lack of formal documentation, and particularly issues that would affect the Romani people because of that. Equally, have a question around issues to do with anti-Gypsyism and education and whether and to what extent education might itself be a response.
And the question was education and anti-Gypsyism in this context.
Was right. Yes, the idea of whether education is an opportunity mm-hmm. or a vehicle through which we might be able to change people's attitudes towards the Roma. Yeah. And I think the question interested in the broader population, not simply the Romani people, but the majorities mm-hmm. around them.
I think it is, we can be sure that's very important to have education. And let us see the reality. I was in Romania, and before I came to Romania, the Romanian MEPs and others asked me, told me that why your people want to go to school, the children from your people, because they spoke something of school abstinence and so on. And then I come to Romania, and I've seen the situation very real. What is happened there? In a little, it's more a village called Stinca. And I've seen this children's was not in the situation to go to school because they was naked. They were sick with hepatitis A. They was completely not in the condition to go anywhere. And they have no access to health. So, and that's a situation that you must see first. And then the next point, when you hear how is the situation in the school, and now I can speak for my own children. My children are very self-confident, and they are confronted with anti-Gypsyism in the school. And myself, I'm a member of the European Parliament. In my own village, some people came to me and say, this Mr. Franz, he is a gypsy. Maybe he will make a big fire in this in this garden and he bring us the Roma from Bulgaria here. That's this problem I have. And that you see, when we speak about education or other things, the main obstacle is anti-Gypsyism. And I will focus really on this point of this form of racism to fight against anti-Gypsyism. Because everything, it is clear, every person, every human being wants and needs education. But not every human being has access to have education. And that's really, you can speak about this problem at a very high level, what we do now, but I will think at what is really the problem when you are there in the grassroots. And I see it all the time when I was in Spain, or when I was in Italy, or when I was in Bulgaria or Slovenia. Everywhere was a problem, this big anti-Gypsyism that was the obstacle, the biggest obstacle for these people to have an equal participation. And I can tell you only this one. We must, and that's my work in my resolution and for the new framework. I told them the priority must have the fight against anti-Gypsyism. That's really the important point, that they recognized that anti-Gypsyism is the biggest reason, therefore, that we have no equal participation. And we want not more and not less, only an equal participation, human rights and citizen rights. And here's the point too, that you must think about. They see many people of the majority don't see us as citizens. They see us as aliens. Because they don't say, you are a citizen. No. We are someone, we are everything, no, only we are no citizens. So, and that's the biggest problem. We want only our citizen rights, our human rights, and the equal participation, not more and not less. And that's my work. And I think every night about this, how I can change the mind of the commission that they can see what I mean with this, that we want equal rights, and that's only with a binding character a strategy can work.
Angela, I think you also wanted to add a comment on the education question.
Yeah, thank you so much. I just would like to pick it up here where Romeo Franz just finished, that what can we do and how can we address the educational inequality of Romani children and Roma in Europe. So I believe that we have to approach it from two points, actually, from two perspectives. One of that how can we change the content? That's the anti-Gypsyism, the content of the curriculum in the educational system at every level, at the elementary, at the high school, at the tertiary level. And the second thing is, the second approach, what we can use that, how can we improve the access to quality education? And it's not going to happen without any kinds of structural change. And it's not going to happen with a project, with a 1 year or 2 years project. It's going to change with some kind of structural changes. And that's why it's important to talk about, you know, the structural racialization. For example, just to continue on that line, what we are doing at CU, we started the Roma graduate preparatory program, which helps Roma graduate to enter to master program or PhD programs at CU or in other European university. So this not gonna happen. I mean, of course, there are some genius, you know, people who are coming from this really deprived and group, marginalized, who are living in a deep poverty and who are living in a segregated areas, but it's not going to happen just like that, right? So we have to provide some kind of social mobilization. And if you believe the fundamental mission of education and educational system, which provide a social mobility for everybody, regardless their race, gender, and then we have to ensure that what are the mechanisms, what are the structural changes, what we can initiate in a higher education. And yes, and I'm talking about actually higher education because by Romeo Franz as well, you emphasize many times that, you know, our people, equality, we want to be equal. Equality is offered by law. We have a human rights declaration. So that's why I was referring, all of us are equal. But how can we claim that? And I think equality can be, equality is going to be achieved when we will have enough people who are middle class as well as who are able to articulate and who will sit in various places in the European Parliament, in the European Commission, who will study at LSE. Just think about how many Romani students did you have at LSE? Probably not many, or you can count on your hand, as what we are doing, you know, at CEU. We try to increase the number of Romani students in our master's programs and PhD programs. And we really believe that this will help to enforce and implement equality and social mobilization for Roma.
Thank you. We've got a couple of more questions coming in that I want to pass on to Mr. Franz. Question around the accession strategy. Obviously, so far we've talked about policies inside the European Union, but this question has to do with accession policies and asks whether and to what extent the poor treatment of Romani people, for instance, in countries like Serbia, actually has an impact on accession strategy. Also have a comment from Tim Judah, who is a correspondent for The Economist magazine covering the Balkans, and says that he understands the Romani are not homogeneous, but still, if there were Romani parties, then they would be important players in several countries, perhaps even holding the balance of power, for instance, in Romania and Bulgaria. So the question, I think, inviting you to perhaps say a little bit more about whether and to what extent the political party system might be a way forward.
It is our right to bid parties, political parties. There's no question. But I'm not really a friend of a party where are only Romani people. Because I think we can change only or we can fight against a problem with success when we fight with the majority together. So I think, okay, the riots and the topics of Romani people. Look at me. For me, was not a question to build a Romani party in Germany. I've seen the Green Party, and the Green Party was for my topic with Romani people, for anti-Gypsyism, for equal participation, was the right party for me. And I found friends there. They are behind me, and they are no Roma, Romani people. They are from the majority, and we fight together against racism and injustice. And I feel good, because I know a big part, the most part of the majority is behind me. And I think that it gives more success to fight. Oh, okay, that's my opinion. Someone says, now we need a Romani party in every county. Yeah, I'm not against this, but I think I find this mix with the majority very much more effectful and successful than to do it alone. So that's something what I mean. What's very, very important is maybe not the question about stateless people that we have. Okay, when you are in Bulgaria, Romania, or others, in the most of our people, not that's not right. In Romania, I think many people are not registered. That has a reason, because when our people have in these countries in the East Europe, not really access I'm looking for this word. They have not really an access to the to this. I must say it in German, to this Verwaltung. You know what I mean? Where you can have your passport and so.
So vital statistics departments and public registry offices. That's
they hate them. I have seen this with my eyes. When Romani people come, they are very poor, and they come there and they want their passport. They don't give them the passports. So when they are very poor and they are living in poverty, they have a big problem to have an insurance and to get a passport. And in Germany, it's not so much from our Romani people that they have not that they are stateless. But in east of Europe, we have really a big problem with this situation with the registering for our people. That has, I think, other reasons too, because my people, the Romani people in these countries, they see them as an human resource in a really bad way too. And they use them when they are stateless, they can use them very much better for their bad things. So that's some reason. That's a reason that I have that experience to what I have from this side. But as I think it's a problem of anti-Gypsyism again. And when we see when a Romani man wants his passport, or that he has a much more bigger problem than a man from the majority, and that's a reality, and that shows us again that anti-Gypsyism, the majorities in the government must fight against anti-Gypsyism to fight against these problems too. Please excuse my bad English.
Angela, would you like to come in on this part of the conversation as well?
Yeah, just very shortly. I think I would change the question. So why don't we think about that? How can we increase the participation of Roma in mainstream political parties, right? Just like as Romain of France was talking about the European Green, how much they are supportive. And I believe that, if we are thinking about inclusion, integration, participation, and including Roma in our society, then we should think about how can we include them in our political party system as well. So Roma political party. There are some countries, but I assume that this is a kind of reaction to the extreme marginalization and social exclusion, and even as a reaction to extreme, you know, nationalism, what we are witnessing in many countries. But that should not be, I believe that it's not the ideal, but we could come to that point when, you know, Roma will feel that they are so much abandoned by the political parties and the political elite that they have to establish their own party. But I hope that is not going to happen. Rather, European political parties will think about that, what they can do and how they can integrate Roma in their political system. That would be absolutely important and vital.
Thanks, Angela. I don't think we've yet touched on the issue of accession strategy. Did you want to kind of come in on that a little bit as well, perhaps, panelists?
What?
There was a question around the accession strategy and the extent to which the treatment of the Romani people was significant in that context, particularly, for instance, thinking about Serbia.
Oh, I mean, when I was talking about that in the late 90s, Roma become really a focus of the EU integration policies in Central Eastern Europe, we can see the same kinds of trends in Serbia and West Balkans as well, that Roma are important and government has to improve their human rights situation. I think something which is scary and we have to think about it very thoughtfully, when Roma of France was referring that sometimes Roma are treated as a human resources, when they are commodified and instrumentalized in order to access funds. And that was actually in the Roma monitoring, civil monitoring report as well. That's why they urged the European Commission that they should really investigate how this money was spent and was abused by some member states. And because if you read the reports, there were lots of money, there were lots of projects, right? And how is it possible that this kind of project didn't improve the situation of those people who are living in a segregated communities, who are living in a most marginalized areas in Hungary, Slovakia, Czech Republic, Romania, and Bulgaria? So where are those money? And I think this is a really serious, like, theoretical issue as well, like the commodification and instrumentalization of a racialized group, right? Who was a powerless and can be used, and the aims and objectives can be distorted by people who want to take advantage on these kinds of fans.
Thanks, Angela. We're actually approaching the end of our time. It's gone amazingly quickly. I think this has been such an interesting conversation. Before we have to adjourn, I wonder, Mr. France, if there's some final comments that you would like to share with us.
Okay. But I will react to this question before. The EU has an agreement with enlargement countries, and the EU framework targets countries such as Serbia, Kosovo, Albania, and so. There is also the Poznan Declaration reinforcing the commitment of Western Balkans to ensure Romani inclusion as part of the enlargement process. However, it is difficult when you see that there is a law when it comes about Romani people, it does not implement it. And that's, I think, the point when we speak about Serbia or Kosovo. I was there. We have the same problem the situation, they want the money. I tell it so very clear. They want the money, but our people don't get this money. So it's anywhere, many persons open their hands and get the money, but our people There is no monitoring, really. And from the EU, the monitoring is very less. And that must change, really. And monitoring with these funds, with these financial funds, it's, I think, one of the important instruments what we need. And here, the affected people must be a part too. That's very, very important for to have a success in this situation.
Angela, would you like to make a final thought to share with us?
Just very quickly, I totally believe in that, like acknowledging that anti-Romani racism or anti-Gypsyism, it's really underpins the Romani exclusion, is one of the first steps in initiating systemic transformation and systemic changes to rectify structural violence in Europe. Indeed, racial profiling, police abuse and violence, and the disproportionate incarceration of Roma are only the tip of the iceberg, really, just tip of the iceberg, and all require really urgent addressing. And by EU institutions, as well as by member states, to the long-awaited promise of justice for Roma is ultimately achieved. So I think this promise, which has been made in late 90s, it's never really reach the most marginalized and most segregated communities in Europe.
Thank you. Well, I think this probably brings us to our close. It's been a great pleasure for me to listen and to be able to engage with both of you. Very important conversation that we have had today. I want to thank both of you, Mr. France, Dr. Cote, for joining us, and equally for the audience for attending and for putting forward their questions. This is obviously just the first in the series that is being organized, and I think we've certainly gotten that series off to a really excellent start. So thank you very much to everyone, and I hope we all, wherever you are, have a great rest of the evening. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.